Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and we're going to start today with two stories about guns in America. The U.S. Senate is scheduled to take a vote on several gun control measures later today. More on that in a moment. Also today in Bridgeport, Connecticut, a crucially important hearing in a lawsuit that challenges federally granted immunity to gun manufacturers. The suit is being brought by the families of victims of the Newtown school shooting. They're suing firearm manufacturer Remington, a distributor and the seller of the weapon the shooter used to kill 26 people at Sandy Hook Elementary School in December 2012. Matthew Soto was 15 years old when his little sister Victoria was killed at Sandy Hook. He spoke before court began today.
I know the firsthand effects of an assault rifle. I was present at the firehouse on 12/14/12 when 25 other families learned that our loved ones were killed after hours of sitting, hoping and praying that they were alive. On 6/16, as I heard the news from Orlando, so many emotions went through me, from horror to sadness, grief, and disgust. As I watched the news that day, I went back to that horrible day in December.
Well, joining us now with more on the case is John Dankosky. He's executive editor of the New England News Collaborative, and he joins us from the studios of WNPR in Hartford, Connecticut. John, good to have you.
Thanks so much.
So first of all, the actual trial here in this case isn't scheduled to start for 2 years, but what happened in this sort of pretrial hearing today?
Yeah, first of all, it is a little bit unusual for a case like this even to make it this far. That's why we're paying so much attention here. It might not have made it that far if not for it being in Connecticut, a state with pretty tight gun laws. Instead of federal court, a lot of cases like this have not been quite as successful. Today's hearing was essentially over whether or not this case has merit. If the judge finds that it does, as you say, there's a court date set for early 2018, so there's still a long way to go between now and then.
Mm-hmm. So what's at the heart of the case, of the lawsuit that the family members and victims of Sandy Hook are bringing against Remington and the distributor and the seller?
Well, there's this law that was passed by Congress back in 2005. It's called the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, and it essentially shields gun makers from liability when guns are used in a crime. Now, back then, if you'll remember, the bill was seen as a top priority of the National Rifle Association, which was facing a series of lawsuits from individuals and also from towns and cities. This law, when it was signed in 2005, got pretty broad bipartisan support, both Democrats and Republicans. Now, the Senate is debating gun control measures right now. The lawyer behind this case, Josh Koskoff, says that the lawsuit here is about something different than the laws that Congress writes. Let's listen to him talking outside the courtroom before the hearing today.
It's vitally important that these two branches of government leave each other alone and that the laws of Congress, which can be influenced by industries like the gun industry, are not then held up in a court of law to say, see, what do you want from us? We sold a legal weapon. Well, when you influence the laws, you can make pretty much any weapon legal you want to.
So that's the argument vis-a-vis what the plaintiffs are saying, why the case should go forward. As you said, that's Joshua Koskoff, the plaintiff's attorney. What was the argument then made by Remington today? Because they claim that the case has no standing.
Yeah, so the law that was written back in 2005 shields the gun maker from lawsuits that stem from, quote, a properly functioning product, even one that is used illegally. So basically, if you use a gun to shoot someone, that's what the gun is supposed to do, say the gun makers. Now, it doesn't shield lawmakers or gun makers, excuse me, from the types of claims you might make against a product that doesn't work. For instance, if a gun didn't work and blew up in someone's hands, the manufacturer could still be sued. So this lawsuit takes a kind of a different tack. It says that the AR-15, which was originally built by Armalite as a military weapon back at the time of the Vietnam War, is a weapon of war. And it brings into question a loophole that the plaintiffs are trying to exploit called negligent entrustment. What this means is like a maker of a product or the seller of the product could be held liable for selling it to someone who they know might use it in a harmful or destructive way. The lawyers for Remington, Meghna, say they couldn't possibly know that when they make a gun that's legal to purchase on the market, that someone might use it like this, that they might use it to commit a terrible crime.
Right. So we actually have some tape from Remington defense attorney James Votes exactly on this point.
If a manufacturer is not there to assess the incompetency or competency of the entrustee, how can it ever be shown that the manufacturer knew or reasonably should have known of that person's incompetence? That's what negligent entrustment law is in the state of Connecticut. That's where it is throughout this country.
So, John, I'm curious, how narrow is that window of negligent entrustment? I mean, he's pointing to specifically how it's seen in Connecticut.
Well, it's fairly narrow in the way that it's written. But what the plaintiffs are saying is, hold up, this is a gun that was made for use on the battlefield. It's marketed to civilians with all the trappings of a military-grade weapon. And what they're arguing is that the gun makers are essentially negligently entrusting a weapon to a population that doesn't have either the skill or the training to use these weapons. It is, I think many legal scholars say, a stretch, but it is also the first time a case like this has gotten quite this far. And I've talked to some lawyers who've said that this is an unusual and interesting legal tack, a way at getting at this gun law in a way that people haven't tried before.
Right. So today's hearing was held in the courtroom of Superior Court Judge Barbara Bellis. And John, if I remember correctly, she was the same judge who was allowing the case to go forward to begin with. Is that right?
That's right. And so the case was allowed to go forward. Essentially, she said some time ago that there is jurisdiction in this case. Today's hearing was just about whether or not there are merits in the case. We're not sure when we're going to hear from her again on that. And if we have a trial, it will be quite a while until we actually have a trial in Bridgeport. There was some talk today about whether parts of this case might have to be heard by the Connecticut State Supreme Court, some very technical parts of the case which might go to another court, and we haven't heard any more on that yet.
Okay, so because we have a little bit of tape again from inside the courtroom today, and it's a particular line of questioning or an observation that Judge Barbara Bellis made today, where she's comparing how society's thinking about these sort of semi-automatic rifles to how perhaps society looks at cigarettes. Let's listen.
You know, years ago, cigarettes, I don't know that at least the public didn't consider them unsafe, perhaps, but I don't think anybody now would argue that cigarettes are safe. I mean, times change. Society changes. So what, cigarettes are legal, but I think that the society has changed on how safe they may or may not be.
So, John, does this give us into any kind of window into how Judge Bellis might be thinking about today's pretrial hearing?
Well, I think it does say something that she's talking about that in court, that she decided that this case could indeed get this far. And it echoes what we've heard from a lot of legal scholars. I mean, we talked to John Thomas, a professor of law and public health at Quinnipiac University, who said that knife manufacturers don't get this kind of immunity, lawnmower manufacturers don't get this kind of immunity, but Congress decided to immunize gun makers and dealers from lawsuits based on acts committed with their products. Essentially, I think what some of the legal scholars and the judge in this case are saying is times have changed a little bit since 2005, and we certainly, sadly, have had so many more cases like this that both state houses and also the Congress are considering questions of whether or not the laws that we have are the laws that we should have moving forward regarding guns like the AR-15.
So we'll see what happens regarding today's hearing. But John, before I let you go, another quick question about Connecticut gun laws, because just in the aftermath of the Newtown shooting in April 2013, Connecticut passed a ban on military-style semi-automatic rifles. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court had the opportunity to weigh in on that ban because there's been a challenge to it. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, essentially, the U.S. Supreme Court said that they are not going to hear a challenge to this law. Similar laws were passed in the wake of the Newtown shooting in Connecticut and New York. Essentially, they're bans of weapons like this, semi-automatic military-style assault weapons. In their petition to the Supreme Court, the Connecticut Citizens Defense League and others charged that banning a particular class of firearms was unconstitutional. They said that an earlier high court ruling that protects the use of firearms owned by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes would actually hold in this case, but the Supreme Court said, no, the Connecticut law is lawful. They're not going to hear this case. So for gun rights advocates in Connecticut, really two big wins today, just even this hearing getting this far in the state case, and then also the U.S. Supreme Court deciding to uphold the Connecticut gun ban.
That's John Dankosky, executive editor of the New England News Collaborative, speaking to us from WNPR in Hartford, Connecticut. John, thank you so much.
Happy to do it, Magna.
All right. Well, let's move from Connecticut and New England to the U.S. Senate, because as we mentioned a little earlier, the Senate is poised to vote on four gun control measures later today. The action follows a filibuster last week by Senate Democrats who demanded votes on the issue following the shooting massacre at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. Among those pushing for stronger gun control laws is Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey, who supports a measure that would prevent anyone on a federal terrorist watch list from buying a gun. Markey says he's ready to take on the NRA and its support in Congress on the issue.
We are going to have that vote. It will be the showdown. If you cannot fly, you should not be able to buy an assault weapon or any weapon in the United States.
Well, joining us with more is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. He's been following the debate. Anthony, good to see you.
Good to be here.
So first of all, lay out exactly what's happening in the Senate today.
All right. Well, as you said, four different measures are being debated. And let's start with that proposal to prevent anyone on a government terrorist watch list from buying a gun. Dianne Feinstein of California is pushing this one. Republicans and the NRA oppose it. They say these lists are secret. There's no way to know for sure who's on it, if you're on it, if I'm on it. So here's Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts. That's the local affiliate of the NRA, who says this kind of law is a threat to lawful gun owners.
There's no due process because we don't even know how you get on that list. I mean, I've been called a domestic terrorist by some people who hate firearms, hate gun owners, don't want anybody to own a gun. So who's determining who gets on that list? I mean, from what I understand, there's been members of Congress that have been placed on that list and have had a hard time getting off.
So, Anthony, is that true? I think I've heard it before, but is it true that members of Congress have been put on the list?
Well, actually, this is one of the myths that dates back many years when the late Senator Edward Kennedy was supposedly placed on one of these lists by accident and couldn't get on his plane. But the story is not true. It was vetted by factcheck.org. And what happened was that TSA officials confused Kennedy's name with another person named Kennedy who had been selected for additional screening. So it was a mistake, but it was easily rectified. Mm-hmm. Kennedy was not on the terrorist watch list. He ultimately boarded his flights. He didn't miss any flights. But Senate Republicans say people could be denied their Second Amendment rights. So here's Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, on why he opposes Feinstein's measure.
You know, we don't want terrorists to get guns, but this has to be done in a constitutional way. And the proposal that Senator Feinstein and Senate Democrats have floated out is that if your name appears on a secret list, that you can be denied your Second Amendment rights. This isn't like getting on an airplane. That's not a constitutional right. This is pretty serious stuff.
Okay, Anthony, so what would Senator Cornyn propose instead?
All right, so this leads us to the second amendment that's being debated today. Cornyn's idea is to block gun sales to anyone on the terror watch list, but only if the attorney general can prove to a judge within 3 days of the attempted sale that there's probable cause to suspect that the buyer has credible links to terrorism. Mm. Democrats say that time frame, that 3 days, would make it virtually impossible to prevent someone suspected of terrorist links from buying a weapon. And they basically accuse Republicans of saying they're doing something when they're doing nothing. So the two sides are pretty far apart on this issue.
Which seems rather typical about these conversations. But speaking of the two sides being far apart, Democrats are also hoping to expand background checks. What's happening with that?
Right. So this is a measure being pushed by Democrat Chris Murphy of Connecticut, who led that 15-hour filibuster last week that Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren joined, among others. He wants to close the so-called gun show loophole. That would require every gun purchaser to go through a background check. As the law stands now, as you know, only guns bought from licensed dealers are subject to the checks. But private sales between individuals or at thousands of gun shows across the country or online purchases are not subject to checks. Mm-hmm. And this is similar to a proposal that lawmakers tried to push through in 2013 after the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. It failed, and it failed in a Senate, by the way, that was controlled by Democrats. So nobody is expecting this to pass this time either. Republicans instead are getting behind a proposal by Charles Grassley of Iowa, who wants to provide more funding for the agency that runs background checks, but the measure would not expand background checks. So once again, the two sides very far apart on this issue.
Which, again, as we keep saying, we say it over and over again. But, you know, here we are, Anthony, in the wake of the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history in Orlando. And once again, it doesn't sound like Congress is poised to do very much. I mean, they're going to take a vote, but you know, what could actually change? I mean, so talk us through the big picture here. What is actually going on?
Yeah, well, what's going on, it seems to be what goes on every time there's a mass shooting. It's become a bit of a routine. There's a mass shooting. The nation's lawmakers tweet and make speeches. They express their sorrow and solidarity with the victims. Then nothing happens. I mean, we mentioned that even after the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, where 20 children were slaughtered by a man with a semi-automatic assault-style rifle, Congress couldn't act. There have been a thousand mass shootings since then. After the San Bernardino killings, Congress didn't act. So this remains such a divisive issue, Meghna, that two sides just seem to talk past each other. The gun lobby still has enormous power and influence. And even though surveys show that a big majority of Americans favor reasonable gun control measures, not a whole lot happens. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, because I sort of asked him this when he was in town. And by the way, he's back in town today talking about this issue. We talked to him last week about what makes him think something can happen this time. And he says the fact that Congress is being forced to debate just a few days after the Orlando killings represents a kind of progress. Here's what he said.
I think now, after the Pulse Club massacre, the people understand that terrorists can be buying these guns. In that one graphic moment, it became everyone is vulnerable, and a terrorist can do it legally in the United States. And I think that explained the whole issue to the American people in a way that they have never had it presented to them before.
But when asked if lawmakers are close to a compromise on any of these measures, Markey said no, there's no sign of compromise. So once again, despite the heated debate, it doesn't look like today's vote will result in any significant changes to the nation's gun laws.
Well, that's WBUR's senior political reporter Anthony Brooks walking us through the debate and vote coming up in the Senate today about several gun control proposals. Anthony, thank you as always.
My pleasure, Mike.
And listeners, send us a tweet. Tweet at Radio Boston and let us know what you think about what Anthony said here, that Senator Markey says that the fact that they're having a debate in the Senate is a sign of progress. But at the same time, as Anthony pointed out, today's vote will probably not result in any changes to the nation's gun laws. What do you think? Send us a tweet at Radio Boston. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.